Ruth Pepco Raskus.
Absolutely, very appropriate.
Okay. Bear calls me and says, I'm saying, Todd, do you have a candle? We have a deal stealing. I know. I call him. He called me this time.
All right. Today's the beginning of a long conversation.
Wayward children.
Wayward children? Malchus.
Oh, Malchus. We're going to get into Shmuel's children.
We did that already. That's done. Good done.
We did. How much do you want? We did it on Pinchas and Coffee for weeks.
That's right. We're kind of.
That's why Shmuel's children got nothing.
That's right.
We've one sentence on Shmuel's kids.
Shmuel's kids were done.
Forget it.
But Yoel and Aviyah. It's interesting. Morning. So we are beginning the lengthy conversation that we are beginning today is the subject of Minui Melech, the appointment of a king. And it's a vast conversation, sources, texts, prakim, really it's the subject or the substantive subject of Tanakh, the latter half of Tanakh as a whole.
Sweet,
sit over
here.
You
got Alan notes over there.
You got to balance the boat.
That's right.
You don't want the boat to
flip
onto this side, do you?
I would argue that if there is a single issue that permeates Tanakh from really almost beginning to end, but certainly from the end of Shoftim until the end of Malachim, which is pretty much the main period of biblical history post Chumash, if there's any subject that really focuses the attention of the Nevi'im, people, the texts, it's the role of the Melech, good kings, bad kings, ideal kings, from historical figures to visions of eschatological visions of Yemot HaMashiach and Melech HaMashiach and the restoration of kingship. Second to, perhaps, and maybe even primary over, the subject of the role of the Mikdash, and its role in Jewish life. I think the subject of a king in Israel is probably the main focus point of the Nevi'im and of Tanakh as a whole. So we are going to scratch the surface, and it's going to come back to us many times over the course of Sefer Shmuel, and really broader as well, in terms of trying to understand the role of a king in Israel. What I'd like to do today is begin just by reading through and understanding the Perek, try to get a sense of what's going on in the story. Time permitting, we will begin to explore some of the sources in the Gemara and in halachic sources related to this question. And then, so you may ask a lot of questions today. I'm not sure how many answers we'll offer, but we'll start. So let's go back, just to put ourselves in the context, we'll go back to the beginning of the Perek. These are the psukim we read last week and discussed. Shmuel is older, Zaken, appointed his sons Shoftim, which raises the question of inheritance, position, lineage, dynasty. Already, just from that opening, you begin to sense that there's a conversation going on. Yoel and Aviyah, velo alchu banav bidvacha v'yetu achar habatza v'yikru shochad v'yetu mishpat. Sons did not live up to the expectations of either of the people, and in some ways maybe not of Shmuel either. And that's what we talked about last week at length. V'yitkabtzu kol ziknei Yisrael v'yavo el Shmuel haramata. Ziknei Yisrael gathered together. They came to Shmuel in Ramah. Ramah is Shmuel's hometown. Tshuvato haramata ki sham beto. Vayamru elav, hinei ata zakanta. Uvanecha lo alchu bidrachecha. Behold, you have gotten old. Your sons have not followed in your footsteps. Ata, now, sima lanu melech l'shofteinu k'chol hagoyim. Give us a king to judge us like all the nations.
We want to be like everybody else.
So we'll talk about the k'chol hagoyim at length. How much of an issue is it? How much of an issue isn't it? What's the significance of this phrase? We will... it's a subject of a great deal of discussion. I'm going to park it for now.
There's no minced words, that's for sure.
Excuse me?
There's no minced words.
No, these guys
are not. No. They want to change the equation. Something's not working. It's time to change the equation.
But there's no, empathy for Shmuel.
Very little at this point. That well, I mean, none at least.
Your sons are low lives. Right.
The
king.
That's right. Yeah. Certainly, in the context of certainly in the context of the conversation here. To some extent, we don't necessarily know that that the tenor of the conversation was exactly this way. Sometimes the Nafi kind of gives us the core of the message without sugarcoating it, whereas. Maybe they were a little more diplomatic when they expressed it. We don't know.
But another way to look at it is that they're not saying we want to appoint X as a king. We want you to choose it. They're basically telling we want you to choose a king for us.
Well, that is true, although remember that Shmuel has two roles. He has the Shofet role.
Yeah.
And he has the Navi role.
Okay.
And the role of a Melech is always appointed by the Navi.
Except it became dynastic.
So what? At that point, the Navi's not appointing the Melech. The Melech is the son of the prior Melech.
Only once you have a dynasty appointed by a Navi.
Right, okay.
If you go back to the Parsha in Chumash, it's clear that the choice of king or the choice of the dynasty is chosen by Hashem. How is that going to express itself? How are they going to know what that choice is? Through the Navi. And in fact, the Navi chooses the beginning of every dynasty. The Navi chooses Shaul. When that fails, the Navi chooses David. When there's a rebellion, the Navi has to get involved in the conversation about the successor. When there's a split in the kingdom, it's through the designation of the Navi. Various places in history, in Tanakh, in Sefer Malachim, where there's a need for, in Malchut Yisrael, more than Malchut Yehuda. But in Malchut Yisrael, where they changed dynasties, every time they changed dynasties, majorly, there was a role of a Navi. The Navi plays a significant role historically, in doing just that, in choosing the king. So that by in itself makes sense. They're coming to Shmuel not as a Shofet, but as the Navi. And uniquely, he plays both roles, hence, Tazakanta, Vibanecha lo'achu b'dvachecha. So if we're looking at the Shofet role, Shmuel, this is coming to an end. On the other hand, you are a Navi, appoint a king for us. Simulanu melech l'shofteinu k'chol hagoyim. That in itself is also a bit of a contradiction. What is melech l'shofteinu? Either he's a shofet or a melech. Right, that's a conversation to have too. There's lots of conversations to have. We're going to have to eventually break it up into pieces. Vayera davar b'nei Shmuel. Kasher amru tnu lanu melech l'shofteinu. Shmuel was unhappy. Embittered, disappointed, evil in his eyes, however harshly you want to describe it, because the people said we want a king to judge us.
He was right. It was a whole big mess after that.
Well, okay, we'll see.
But did he realize how his son's ways also? I mean, wasn't
so that we talked about last week a little bit. I think he did. I think that in some ways is a little bit of a distraction, because I don't necessarily know, we're going to see that the issue of his sons is really the core of the issue. Ultimately, it becomes a question of whether the issue of his sons is the reason motivating the request for a king, or
the excuse.
Because the solution doesn't fit the problem. If you think about it, if the problem is that the sons are too corrupt because they're taking bribes, because they think that they're in a position where they can use their position to garner money and power, And the solution, therefore, is to consolidate all the power that exists in the hands of one individual as a dynasty that you're never going to have a choice in again. I mean...
They could ask for a new shelf.
How does the request solve the problem? It's like going from out of the frying pan into the fire.
Right.
And if there's ever been a problem of corruption and bribery and vaytuach vashachad and money and profit and corruption, the malchus is the most dangerous place to be.
Power corrupts and
absolute power corrupts absolutely. So the solution doesn't, even in their own eyes, even if they haven't gotten to the realization that absolute power corrupts, the solution just doesn't fit the problem. That's one of the issues in this chapter. Is they come along to Shmuel and put all the blame on Shmuel's sons, which is a problem. Shmuel's sons are indeed a problem, but then the solution is out of left field. And that's going to solve the problem of Vayituach Rabatza. So that's one issue we're going to have to address and how that fits. Vayomer Hashem al Shmuel. I skipped four words. Vayit palel Shmuel al Hashem. What does Shmuel do when he's in trouble?
Praise.
Davens. Remember, he's a Navi. Mm-hmm. And the role of a Navi is?
To find out what Hashem wants.
Right, to pray to Hashem. The conversation between, tefillah is a conversation with God. Conversation is a two-way street. In the world, as we've said before, in the world of Nevuah, the Navi is mitpalel and Hashem is minabeh. Navi prays, speaking to God, and God answers through Nevuah to the Navi. It's a two-way street of communication. Post the end of the world of Nevuah, so that communication became, was transformed into a one-way communication. We talk, God listens. Right? That's what tefillah is today. But in the world of Tanakh, tefillah was a communication conversation between man and God. So Shmuel turns to God and asks or speaks to God. Hayomer Hashem al Shmuel, Shema b'kol ha'am l'chol yasher yimru alecha. Listen to the people and all they say to you. Ki lo otcha ma'asu, ki oti ma'asu mimloch alechem. They're not rejecting you. They are rejecting me as their king of kings. So listen to the people. Because they're not really opposed to you, Shmuel. They're really opposed to me.
That sounds even worse.
It's us. 100%. All of the deeds that they did from the day they left Egypt till today. They abandoned me. They worshipped other gods. Now they're doing that to you. Their loyalty is... very short-lived.
What have you done for me, boy?
That's right. What have you done for me lately? Well, as the expression goes, you're only good as your last at-bat.
The fickle finger of fate.
That's it. Ve'ata shma b'kulam. Therefore now, listen to them. Listen to the... go ahead.
Give them what they ask for.
Give them what they ask for, and then tell them to be careful what you wish for. Ach ki ha'ed ta'id behem. Do what they want, give them their king, but first tell them exactly what it means to be a king. Give them the law of kings.
Full disclosure.
Exactly. So now what comes next is Shmuel's description, which has been referred to as Parshat HaMelech. There's a whole discussion in the Halacha, we'll see it in a couple of weeks, as to whether or not as to what included in Parshat HaMelech referring to the authorities, the sweeping powers and the authorities of the king. And so what Shmuel does is he turns to the people and he says, okay guys, you want a king?
Be
careful what you wish for.
Right.
I'll give it to you. But here are the rules. If you want to play by the rules, go ahead.
So is it the intention of the people to build up Ramah as the seat of power?
No, the city is irrelevant.
It's irrelevant, okay.
The city is irrelevant. Where the king will...
They want it to work more well.
They went to Shmuel because Shmuel lived there. They, their issue was they wanted a king. Vayomer Shmuel et kol divrei Hashem el ha'am asho'alim me'ito melech. Shmuel told the people, those requesting a king, all the words of God. We're going to come to a major dispute in the halacha as to whether or not the authorities described herein are permissible or are not permissible. In other words, when Shmuel describes these sweeping powers that a king has, was that meaning that that's exactly what the Torah authorizes a king to do? Or is he saying this is the corruption that a king can lead to? I would already bias that conversation by saying this is Divrei Hashem El Ha'am. Okay? So he's speaking to the people in the name of God. Vayomer, ze yiye mishpat ha-melech asher yimloch aleichem. This is the law of the king. Et b'nechem yikach. He will take your sons. V'sam lo b'mirkavto b'farashav. And he will put them into his chariots and his horses. V'ratzu lifnei mirkavto. And they will be drafted to run before his chariot. And he will take your sons and he will make them into officers over tens of thousands and over 50. And to plow his fields, and to harvest his flock, his crops. And to be the smiths to make his utensils of war. Those are your sons. And he'll take your daughters. Lirakachot, ulatambachot, ulaafot. He'll take your daughters for all kinds of roles, like cooks and bakers. And,
what's rakachot?
To
perfumers.
Perfumers, right? Yeah, to make
perfume.
Well, deodorants and perfumes, and right, you have an army. You have to deal with some of the other nasty things that go with it. And your fields and your vineyards, he'll take those too. He'll confiscate your land because he can. Yikach, v'natan lavadav, and he'll give those lands to his servants. Your seeds and your crops and your vineyard and your harvested grapes, everything that you harvest off your fields, ya'asor. He'll take a tithe, that which is left to you, don't think is yours, after he's confiscated half your lands, the other half, he's going to take taxes from. And he'll give those taxes to his officers and to his servants. And your servants, and your maidservants, and your young sons, and your animals, he'll take them too. He'll do with them what he wants for his work, for his build labor forces, and build his palaces, and build his structures. Tzonchem yasor, he'll tithe your tax your flock. Vatem tiyulo leavadim, you will be his slaves.
Did not mention any words, is he?
Why did
they want? And then, then uzaktem bayomahu. You will cry out to God to give you relief from the king whom you have asked for. And guess what?
He's not
going to
listen.
The lo yana Hashem. And God won't listen because he'll say to you, I told you so.
You asked for it.
You were warned.
Why
can they change your mind right now?
Why are they so insistent?
That's the big question. That's the big question. We're going to spend a lot of time talking about that question. Vayimanu ha'am lishma b'kol Shmuel, the people refused to listen. Vayomru, they said, lo, ki im melech yaleinu. No, we want a king over us. Vayinu gam anachnu k'chol ha'goyim. We want to be like all the other nations. Ushvatanu malkeinu. Our king should judge us. V'yatzah lefaneinu, should go out before us. V'nilcham et milchamoteinu, and fight our wars. Shmuel heard the people's answer, and like Moshe Rabbeinu by Sinai, went back up the mountain to tell God what the people said, even though he didn't have to, because God figured it out on his own. Right, he went back and he reported back to God. Vayomer Hashem Shmuel, Shema b'kolam, listen to the people. Vimlachta lehem melech, go appoint a king. Vayomer Shmuel el Anshei Yisrael, lechu ish le'iro. Concludes and he says, okay, people, go home. Meaning?
He's going to find him a king.
I'll find you a king. You've asked? I will set that task before me as my next priority. Go home. I'll report back to you when I have found you your king. That's Parakat. Believe me, it asks more questions than it answers.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah.
Like all the nations, that's repeated. We've talked about them so many times.
It is repeated several times. We're going to talk about that at length. One of the major issues in this discussion about a king is that phrase, what it means, what its issue is. I want to start that conversation there in a moment, but there are a couple of questions.
If they don't have a king, what would they have instead?
A shofet.
They would have a shofet.
Which is what they've had for the last 400 years.
Shmuel,
Eli, Yiftach, Shimshon, Otniel ben Knaz, Eli ben Gerush, Shamgar ben Anat, you name it.
So they're specifically wanting a king.
They want a king. So part of our conversation, which we're going to have to get to eventually, is to define the fundamental difference between a shofet and a melech so we can figure out what it is that they want. Ultimately, we can't really, and they use the word shofet so many times in the context of a king. Shvatanu malkeinu, v'tnulanu melech l'shofteinu. It's kind of a contradiction in terms.
We want a greater judge.
What is it about the king that's driving this agenda? So part of the answer to that question is going to have to be an understanding of what the difference is between a melech and a shofet. And there are technical differences, there are broader differences. And how does that begin to even address the question that started this whole issue, which is the corruption of Shmuel's sons? This is a very complex story.
Do we know historically if the kings...
I'm
sorry.
Yeah.
Where it says, "Vayomer Shmuel, I called the Brei Hashem al Ha'am, Hashalini to Melech." Did he tell him about the part where they're not rejecting you, Shmuel, they're rejecting me? That would be a hint, like, God's not happy.
Oh, yeah.
Does he tell him those words, too?
I would assume he does. I would assume he does here. But if he didn't do it here, he'll do it quite clearly in Perek Yudbet.
Oh, okay.
Want to glance to Perek Yudbet? I'll show you where. Doesn't mince his words. If you think he minces words here, this is after he appoints the king. This is Perek Yudbet is after they find Shaul and Shaul's first battle, and they make Shaul king. So in the coronation ceremony of their new king, it says the Perek Yudbet, "V'yomer Shmuel al kol Yisrael." You asked me for a king, I gave you a king. Behold, the king who you will go before you. I am getting old. And here are my sons. You could have gone for them. I was loyal to you. I served you. I walked before you from the beginning of my days. Hinini, anuvi, answer me. Neged Hashem uneged Meshicho. I want an answer. With God as my witness, and with your new king as my witness. Et shor milakachti, v'chamor milakachti, v'et mi ashakti, et mi ratzotu, miad milakachti kofe. You tell me one instance where I crossed the line and acted inappropriately, took something that didn't belong to me, took a bribe, took corruption, or ignored you. Vashiv lachem. If I mistreated you in any way, let me know and I'll return it to you. Took this very personally. Vayomru lo ashaktanu v'lo ratzotanu v'lo lakachtu miyad yishmu'um. And they said, Shmuel, no, chas v'shalom, we should choshed you, you're wonderful. Vayomer aleihem ed Hashem b'chem v'ed Meshicho hayom hazeh. God is my witness. His melech, his Mashiach, his anointed one is my witness. Ki lo matzatem biyadi me'uma, that you have that I have taken nothing from you, that you have found no fault in me? Ve'me'ed. Ve'yomer Shmuel el ha'am. He says, okay, now I've got you. Now I've got you. Right between the eyes. Hashem asher asach Moshe v'et Aaron. Ve'asher elav atavchem mi'eretz Mitzrayim. God who took you, who sent you Moshe and Aaron, and who took you out of Egypt, and who's therefore been providing for you all these years. Stand, and I will judge you before God. I will reflect upon all of the righteous good deeds in the moments of history where God has stood for you, up for you. Kasher b'Yaakov Mitzrayim, goes all the way back to Mitzrayim. Gives me a history lesson. Kasher b'Yaakov Mitzrayim. Nation went down to Mitzrayim. They cried out to God. He didn't send them a king. What did he do? He sent Moshe and Aaron. Vishlach Hashem et Moshe et Aaron. Vayatziu et avotechem Mitzrayim, and they took you out of Egypt. Vayashivum b'makom hazeh, and he brought you to this land. Was so schlecht. It's good and good. Right? It was very nice. It was very good. You had Moshe, you had Aaron. It was great. Brought you to this land. And nu, what did you do? And you abandoned God. You asked him the question, did he tell them that they abandoned God in this request, right? He gives them a whole context of this abandoning God. So what did God do when they were evil, when they abandoned God? He sold them into the hands of their enemies. Vayim korotam biyad sisra sa'atzva chatzor, biyad plishtim, biyad melech moav, v'ilachamubam. They had wars because you abandoned God. So you had to fight with Sisra, and you had to fight with the plishtim, and you had to fight with Moav. True? Mm-hmm. This is a review of Sefer Shoftim. Vayizaku al Hashem, they cried out to God. Vayomru chatanu, we've sinned. Kezavnu at Hashem, and avodat abalim et ashtarot. We abandoned God, we worshipped Baal and ashtarot. Now, so save us and we'll serve you. So I sent them Shoftim. Vayishlach Hashem et Yerubal. Who is Yerubal? Who is Yerubal? Yariv Labaal. It was a nickname for
Shemshon?
No. Gidon. Vishlach Hashem et Yerubal ve'et Bedan. Bedan Chazal says Shimshon. Ve'et Yiftach ve'et Shmuel. Ve'et Zolatchem Yad Levechem Yisaviv v'teshuvatach. And every one of these shoftim was successful in saving you from the hands of your enemies, and you dwelt in security, and we had a very good life. However, things got difficult. V'atiruki Nachash Menach Ben Amon ba'alechem. Now you saw that Nachash Menach Ben Amon was your next enemy. And you said, no, we want a king. Vashem alokechem malkechem. Hashem is your king. Yata, hinei melech asher bachartem asher sha'altem. Now, okay, you wanted a king. Here's the king who you choose. Here's the king that God chose. V'hinei natan Hashem alokechem melech. God has acquiesced to your request. He's given you a king. Im tiru et Hashem, avadetem oto, shmatem b'kolo, v'lo tamru et pi Hashem, if you are loyal to God, fear Him, serve Him, listen to His voice, v'tem gam matem, v'gam ha'melech Hashem alach alechem, achar Hashem alakechem, you and your king, if you will be loyal to God. Good. V'im lo tishma'u b'kol Hashem, u'minitem et pi Hashem, but if you continue to rebel, v'ta yad Hashem b'chem, u'v'avotechem. God's anger will be against you and against your leaders and against your kings. I don't think that because you have a king you're requited of this responsibility. Kamata hityatzvu ru'u et hadavar hagadol hazeh asher asah Hashem, asher Hashem oseh le'enichem. Now, he says, let me show you something else. Watch this. Watch this great thing that God will do. Today is the harvest. If you've ever been in Israel in the middle of the spring, Pesach Shavuos time, you know that it is not necessarily, it is not a time of rain. Right? Israel in the summer does not rain. It is the middle of the harvest season. Ekra l'Hashem yiten kolot u'matar. I'm going to call out to God, and he's going to bring thunder and lightning. And by that miracle, du'u du'u, ki ra'atchem rabba asher asitem b'nei Hashem lish'olach melech, that this was a great evil in the eyes of God to request a king. Vayikra Shmuel el Hashem, vayiten Hashem kolot u'matar b'yom ahu, suddenly Shmuel calls out, and like Eliyahu and Har Kamel, out comes the rain and thunder. The people feared God. They feared Shmuel. People turned to Shmuel for another time. Remember, Shmuel's role as a Navi is to be Mitpalel. Shmuel prayed to God we shouldn't die. I guess they were so afraid of the lightning. I thought they were going to die. Ki yasafnu al kol chatoteinu ra'a lish'ol lanu melech. In addition to all of our other sins, we added this one to our list to request a king. Shaul is standing there. Can you imagine what Shaul is thinking? Yeah, this whole conversation after they just anointed Shaul as king. We don't really want a king. We don't really want you. Here's your job. First part of the job is know that we don't want you. God doesn't want you.
Their harata didn't do anything.
What?
Their harata didn't.
Wait. So it gets even stranger. Gets even stranger because after all of this, you'd think at that moment, okay, so back up, do tshuva. Vayomer Shmuel al ha'am, al tirau, don't be afraid. Atem asitem et kol hara'a azot. You have done this terrible, evil thing. However, ach. Al tasudu me'achrei Hashem. Don't veer from God's path. Avadetem et Hashem b'chol levavchem. Serve God with all your heart. Reminiscent of that phrase back in Perek Zion, where Shmuel said to them, "In b'chol levavchem atem shavim." If you return to God with all your heart, v'lo tasu. Don't veer. Ke'achrei ato asher yolo ye'ilu v'lo yatzilu kito ema. Right after all of the abominations and vanities that are insignificant. God will not abandon his people. For his great name. God has made you his people. Don't think for a minute that I'm going to stop praying for you. I'll continue to pray for you. I'm not going anywhere. And I will continue to instruct you and guide you in the proper path. Chiru at Hashem, fear God, v'avadetem oto be'emet, and serve Him truthfully, b'chol levavchem, with all your heart. Kiru at Hashem, higdil imachem, see the great things that God will do for you. Im hareya tareyu, if you will do evil, gam atem gam malkechem tisafu, you and your king will be destroyed. So,
wow. Like, wow, wait.
That's the other half of this parak.
That's
the other half of the parak. So did he tell them that that this was a mistake? Mm-hmm. In their face.
Big time.
And the mystery here is that A, they still went through with it. B, God still requested the king and chose the king. And in fact, as we'll see very, very dramatically as the story progresses, Shmuel embraces Shaul and loves Shaul like a son. Shmuel is his mentor. Shmuel puts all
how
his hopes on Shaul.
When he hears all this?
And Shaul is standing there. There's such a complex set of issues in this story. Which is why I said that it's going to take us time to sort out all of these pieces. I wasn't actually planning to read Perek Bet, but since you raised the question, you sort of get a sense. There's a lot in Perek Bet that you really understand after Perek Tet, Yud, and Yud Aleph. Right? There's three chapters in between R2 Prukken that seem to connect.
About the halachas of Malchus.
What?
You could have just thought it would be just about the halachas of Malchus.
Right. It's much broader. It's much broader than just the Mishpat HaMelucha, the law of the king. The whole dynamic is just a historical moment. They're talking about a assessment of the entire book of Shoftim in that review of the history of the people. So this is really very complex.
Does it put like a terror into Sheol also?
Yeah, it's a really interesting question, how Sheol swallows all of this.
Right.
I guess we'll look at that more when we get there in sequence. Sheol is a very, very unique individual.
I don't
want to get sidetracked. No, sidetracked. But it does raise the question of how Sheol is swallowing all of this.
Can I ask, when the people say, give us a king, do we know historically if the kings of the nations around them at that time, were they good kings? Do we know that?
They were kings.
That's all you know.
Good kings or bad kings, I guess in any era you always had good kings and bad kings. The question how you define good and bad. Successful,
because if they
victorious.
Saw good kings, then they would want to be like the other nations. But if they saw kings that were really bad, why would they want to be like all
so
the other nations?
The only kings we've encountered in the nations around them were, you had Paro and Mitzrayim, you had Eglon Melech Moav, and you had Balak Melech Moav, and you had the king of Ammon, with whom Yiftach engages in a very lengthy conversation over the land grab of Yiftach, of Ammon, and you had the kings of the Plishtim, and you had do I need to finish the list?
Yeah. There were.
The only kings that they've ever encountered are the kings they went to war with.
Okay.
Right? How does Sefer Shoftim begin with the description of? Remember, go back to the beginning of Sefer Shoftim? The boast of Melech Moab, I think it is. Melech Noban Knaz. Oh, yeah, Perek Aleph, right at the beginning. Adoni Bezek, Perek Aleph, Shoftim Perek Aleph. Vayimtzu et Adoni Bezek bevezek ve'ilachamu bo. They fought against Adoni Bezek in Bezek. Adoni Bezek means the king of Bezek, right? Name twice. Vayaku et Aknani ve'tapizi. Vayanas Adoni Bezek vayidafu acharav. They ran after Adoni Bezek, they chased him, they captured him, and they chopped off his thumbs and big toes. Why? Vayamru Adoni Bezek, Shivim melachim bonot yadahem v'raglehem kutsatzim ayu melaktim tachat shulchani, said Adoni Bezek, 70 kings, thumbs and big toes, were cut off and sitting in a box under my dinner table. Kasher asiti ken shalom li Elokim. As I have done to others, so now God has repaid me. V'yaviyu Yushalayim, they brought him to Yushalayim, and there he died. So they've had encounters with kings.
Not very pleasant.
I mean, the Canaanite kings at the time were cruel and vicious, and they would brand every power nation that they conquered, they would take their king and brand them like a slave. Mm. Right, there's a reason why the Torah says that if you have a Canaanite slave and you maim them in any way, if you a tooth or an eye, and you set them free. Because in the world of ancient civilizations of Canaan, one of the first things you did when you bought a slave was you branded them. And that the Torah prohibited. This is a branding. This is a king saying, "You're my kings who I the kings who I conquered. Those kings, I'm not going to kill them. I'm going to keep them alive and enslaved and in jail. I'm just going to brand them, so that they can never shoot a gun again. Take off their thumb. They can never shoot an arrow or a spear or fight. Mm. Right? It's a way of essentially making them unable to fight back, slaves, and unable to fight back. That's why they can't run and they can't fight if you cut off their thumb and their toes. This was the world of the Canaanite kings. So, I don't know what good kings' examples they would have had, but they certainly have examples of vicious kings.
Tanakh is going out of its way to describe good kings. But, I mean, isn't there also, from the geopolitical aspect, I mean, they hadn't had success, which they'd have a shelfate, and then they would fall back. And maybe the people are saying, you know, it's enough of this. We need a better model.
I think that is very true and very much part of what they're saying. That's a conversation to be had. Okay. So let's spend a few minutes. We have half an hour. Spend a few minutes and begin to look at some of the sources as they relate to the question of Minyan Melech. While we're handing out this page, we have to go back to, we're going to put a marker on this page so we can come back to it. Parak Chet is where we're up to, and we are going to jump to the parsha of Melech in Chumash, which is Dvarim Parak Yud Zayin. Yud Zayin, 17.
Not Yud Zayin, Parak.
Ki tavo pasuk yud dalet, starting with verse 14. Ki tavo el haaretz asher Hashem elokecha noten lach. When you will come into the land that God will give you, vivishta, conquer it, viyashavta ba, settle therein. V'yamarta asima alai melech kechol agoyim asher sivivotai. You will say, I will appoint upon us a king like all the nations who are around me. Som tasima alecha melech, you will surely appoint a king. Ashiv char Hashem elokecha bo, whom God will choose. Mikerev achecha tasim alecha melech, king must be appointed from amongst your brethren. Lo tuchal latet alecha ish nochri asher lo achicha hu, you may not appoint a foreign person as king. Right? Everybody with me? Mm-hmm. This is a mitzvah of appointing a king, the mitzvah of minui melech. Then the Torah places limitations on this king. Rak lo yarbe lo susim, v'lo yashiv et ha'am Mitzrayim alaman harbot sus. He may not have too many horses. People having trouble finding it. Rak lo yarbe lo susim, v'lo yashiv et ha'am Mitzrayim alaman harbot sus. Can't have too many horses, lest it. The king tried to return the people to Egypt in order to gain more horses. Hashem amar lechem lo tosifun l'shuv b'derech hazeod, despite the fact that God has instructed you not to return to Mitzrayim again. V'lo yabelo nashim v'lo yasul levavo, nor can he have too many wives, political marriages, in order not to stray his heart. V'chesef v'zahav v'lo yarabelo ma'od, nor can he gather too much gold and silver, lest he become haughty. Vayakish shifto al kisei mamlachto, as he sits on the throne of his kingdom. V'chatav lo et mishnei haTorah hazot al sefer milifnei hakohanim al sefer milifnei hakohanim haleviim. He has to write a copy of this sefer Torah. Vayitayimo v'kara bo kol yamei chayav. He should be with him. He should read it all the days of his life. L'man yilmad liyirat Hashem elokav lishmorat kol divrei haTorah hazot v'tochukim ma'ele la'asotam. In order that he should learn to fear God and observe all the laws of the Torah, levoltidum levavom echav, he shouldn't become haughtier than his brethren. Ulevolti surman amitzvaya minu small, king is subject to the law and not the other way around. Leman yarich yamim al mamlachto hu uvanav bekerav Yisrael. In order that he should have longevity on his throne he and his sons in the midst of Israel. That's the Parsha of Melech in Chumash. And it raises a number of very powerful questions and a raging debate, historically, a debate in Chazal, a debate in the Gemara, a debate in the Rishonim, a debate in Mefarshim, a debate historically as to whether the Torah really wanted us to appoint a king. What does the debate revolve around? The two key phrases in this passage that the debate revolves around.
Could one be Va'amarta Asima Alai Melech B'chol Hagoyim Asher Svivotai?
Correct. The first is that the request for a king, as it's formulated in the Torah, is defined as a request that comes from the people. Torah doesn't start by saying, when you will come into the land of Israel, and you will dwell there, and conquer it, and settle in there, Som Tasim Alech HaMelech, you shall appoint a king. It's an interesting phrase. Torah starts with a description of the context in which the mitzvah of Minui Melech applies by saying, when you will come into the land of Israel, and you will conquer it, and settle it, V'amarta Asim Alei Melech K'chol HaGoyim Asher Sivivotai, and Tvarim Perek Yitzayin. You will say, V'amarta, you will say in the future, I will appoint over me a king, Asima Alei Melech K'chol HaGoyim, like all the nations around me. That sounds like the mitzvah of a king, or the context in which the Torah defines the appointment of a king, is based on
the
request of the people. If the people request a king, then the Torah says, fine, you can have a king. Which sounds like it is
conditional
and optional. And if the people never make the request of a king, there'll be no king. On the other hand, the next phrase, Pasuk Tedvav, Som Tasim Alecha Melech, Asher Yivchar Hashem Alekecha Bo, Som Tasim Alecha Melech means?
Surely you will.
Right. Now, how do they translate it there? I'm just curious.
Then thou mayest appoint a king.
Notice what they've done. Okay, Som Tasim Alecha Melech, they've translated as, you may appoint a king. It's a very strange phrase. Because when the Torah says that when your brother will be impoverished and come to you for a loan or for tzedakah, patoach tiftach et yadecha, which is the same grammatical form as som tasim alecha, right? It's the infinitive followed by the verb. It's the same grammatical form. There, the Torah doesn't mean you may open your hand and give, right? But you shall and you must. Or, Pakod Yifkod Elokim Etchem, God may redeem you from Egypt? No, God will redeem you from Egypt. Every phrase of this form, infinitive form of the verb, followed by the conjugated form of the verb, Som Tasim, Patoach Tiftach, Aser Ta'aser, Tzedek Tudav is a little different. It's a grammatically different form. But every single place in Chumash where the verb form of the infinitive followed by the conjugated verb, Som Tasim, Patoach Tiftach, Pakod Yifkod, there are many others, Aser Ta'aser, we'll find just look through Chumash, you'll find more, but for now that's five. Every single place in Chumash, the translation is always the same. And the translation is, you must surely. The purpose of the double language of the infinitive form of the verb followed by the conjugated form of the verb is to place the emphasis on this you must do. Right, that translation is, you shall surely, you must, Som Tasim, you must appoint over yourselves a king. Which is the language of a mitzvah. Aser Ta'aser is a mitzvah. Som tasim alach hamelach is a mitzvah. So these two expressions, on the one hand, the amarta asim alai melech kochol agoyim, you will say, we want a king. And on the other hand, som tasim alach hamelach, you must surely appoint a king, seem to reflect two different tenors or messages being expressed in this passage, which leads to the machloket and the mafash. If you place the emphasis on the viamarta simulei melech, that a king is optional, then the way you're going to read the verse is, if you decide you want a king, then surely that's fine, I will let you have a king, but som tasim alecha melech asher yivchar Hashem alokecha bo mikerav achecha tasim alecha melech lo tuchal letet alecha ish nachri. Then the emphasis is, if you decide you want a king, then you must appoint only a king whom God chooses. And the qualification being not the mandate of appointing a king, but the authorization, but only in the context of a king whom God shall choose, through the Navi. On the other hand, if you see the emphasis of Som Tasim Alech HaMelech as you must surely appoint a king, then you have to figure out some other interpretation of the phrase Vasim Alei Melech Kochol Agoyim, and why the Torah presents the king mitzvah as a response to a request of the people. The Torah does not present the mitzvah, any other mitzvah, as a response to the request of the king. If you decide you want to keep Shabbos, so this is how you keep Shabbos. If you decide you want to keep kosher, then this is how you keep kosher. It doesn't work that way. If you decide you want a shofet, so then you'll have to appoint shoftim. Shoftim v'shoftim titen lecha b'chol sherecha. You appoint shoftim, you appoint judges, you appoint courts, and you appoint officers, and you maintain law and order, and that's what you have to do. An option. Right? You can prefer anarchy, or you can appoint the king. It's not an option. So this parak is a mystery. But the connection...
Yeah, how do you explain the whole book of shoftim, then?
You know, I jumped for a second. The shofet and the mitzvah of shoftim v'shoftim titen lecha b'chol sherecha is a judicial position, and the shoftim in Sefer Shoftim is
that, but yeah. Once they went into Eretz Israel,
right? Oh, so why didn't they?
Right.
Oh.
Then why did they go to the whole book of shoftim? I mean,
right. That's a very powerful question. Why did it wait 400 years? 100%. Right. That's exactly. These are the questions we have to address. As I said, there are a lot of questions. If we're going to deal with this subject, we're going to deal with it not so much a while, but I want to deal with it thoroughly, because otherwise it leaves pieces unanswered.
The Kochol HaGoyim is in here.
And the Kochol HaGoyim is here. It starts here. This is the first place you find it, mm-hmm. where the phraseology of the people, we want a king like all the nations, Kochol HaGoyim,
is
then
important?
Repeated in the language of the Zkenim, Simulai Melech L'Shofteinu Kochol HaGoyim, and then picked up. So it's repeated three times. So that's also an issue. What does that phrase mean? How bad is it to want a king like all the other nations? That's part of the conversation.
You think it's somewhat ironic that they talk about appointing a king in a chapter called Shoftim?
Well, the Parsha's names are irrelevant.
Yeah, but that's how the Parsha starts out.
Because the Parsha is dealing with leadership roles. But okay. The Shofet there is a judicial position. You have to be careful not to confuse the Shofet of Parshat Shoftim, which is a judicial position, with the Shofet of Sefer Shoftim, which is a military position. In Chumash, the word Shofet means a judge in a court. In Sefer Shoftim, the word Shofet means military leader who leads the people. If you wanted a jump, the jump between the Shofet of Sefer Shoftim to the equivalent role in Chumash, the equivalent role in Chumash was that of the Nasi. Mm. Leader of the tribe who would lead them into battle if there was a war against them. The Shofet was a different... In Chumash, the Shofet role was that of a judge. Meaning, literally, what we would call a judge. Shoftim b'shotrim. Courts and magistrates. It's a very different role than that of the Shofet. It just shares a name, but it's a name but they share a name only, but that's it. It's a different role. It's really the role of the Nasi in Chumash, now becoming called the Shofet, but it's, don't confuse them. It is somewhat confusing, but that is the story. Okay, so let's take a look. We're going to do one. We'll just begin this conversation in the sources in the Gemara and Sanhedrin, and then we will pick this up next week, Be'ezrat Hashem, more extensively. Rabbi Yossi Omer. Yossi made the following statement: Kol ha'amur b'parshat ha'melech, melech mutar bo. The first thing that is the discussion of the Gemara is, are the authorities listed by Shmuel in the listing of the powers of the king? Where he describes, he'll take your sons, he'll take your daughters, he'll take your animals, he'll take your vineyards, he'll take your land, he'll tithe your crops. Are those things that the king, are those authorities that the king has, that Shmuel describes, authorities that the king is entitled to do halachically and legally, or is Shmuel just trying to scare them? So Rabbi Yossi says, "Kol ha'amur b'pashat ha'melech, melech mutar bo." Anything set out in the chapter relating to the authorities of the king is permitted to do so. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, lo nemra pashazu ela kadei le'ayem aleihem. No. The king is no more authorized to grab and confiscate land than anybody else. But, so why is it listed there? Because Shmuel was trying to threaten them, scare them. As it says, Som tesim alecha melech, shetei eimato alecha. You shall appoint a king. He has his, after the, there has to be awe, there has to be fear of the king in order for the people to stay in line. Similarly, Rabbi Yehuda said the following: Shalosh mitzvot nitztavu Yisrael beknisatan la'aretz. The three mitzvot the Bnei Yisrael were commanded to do when they entered into the land of Israel. One, la'amid lahem melech, to appoint a king. Two, la'achrid zar'o shel Amalek, to destroy Amalek. Three, livnot lahem bet ha'bechira, to build a bet ha'mikdash. Now, from that position alone, before I get to the next line of the Gemara, from Yehuda's position alone, how would you define the mitzvah of the king? Is the mitzvah to appoint a king optional or mandatory?
Mandatory.
Why?
Because it comes first.
It says these commandments are given.
These are the things you do when you come into the land.
These are the things you do when you come into the land, and it links the three, and it links specifically the appointment of a king to two others, namely,
destroy
Amalek and build a Beit HaMikdash, and there is no halachic position that says that destroying Amalek is optional. You need a king as a prerequisite to address Amalek. Why? We'll talk about when we get to Amalek. But you need a king as a prerequisite to address Amalek. If you have to address Amalek at some point or another, you must have a king. That's the position of Rabbi Yehuda.
And also build a Beit HaMikdash.
And build a Mikdash, you need a king. Rav Nehorai Omer, says Rav Nehorai, lo nemra pasha zu ela keneged ta'umatan. This entire section of the appointment of a king was spoken only in anticipation of their future murmurings. Shenemar, v'amarta simalai melech kuchal ushavtenu kuchal agayim, if you will say, right, v'amarta can mean when you say, and it goes to mean if you say, you will say, we want a king. God says, okay, I'll give you a king.
Lots of luck.
But, right. With the unspoken lots of luck addendum. Which means that according to Rav Nehorai, is there a mitzvah to appoint a king? A mandated mitzvah to appoint a king? No. It's a context in which if you want to do it, so this is how you do it. It's optional, not necessarily encouraged. Like there's a mitzvah of shechita. Think about it like this. There's a mitzvah shechita. What's the mitzvah shechita? If you want to eat meat, this is how you have to slaughter the meat. Does that mean that you have to shecht an animal?
No.
No. You don't want to eat meat, don't shecht.
You can be a vegan.
Hey, you can be a vegetarian.
A vegan
is already going a little bit further, but you can certainly be a vegetarian. Right? You don't want to eat meat, don't eat meat. You want to eat meat, here's the allowance to do so. You have to know that you have to shech the animal, etc. There are limitations. You want a king? Fine. There are consequences to having a king. But if you want it, I'll give it to you. That's Rav Norai's position. Skip the next paragraph for a moment. Take a look at the Sifrei. The Sifrei in source 2 is the same argument, but it's expressed a little bit differently and a little more dramatically. A word about the Sifrei. What is the Sifrei? So, when we talk about Midrashim, we often lump all of Midrash into one picture, Medrash. Right? The Medrash says, the big Medrash says, the little Medrash says, Medrash. Which is really unfair, because Medrash is a term given for a genre of expounding text for the purpose of drawing and learning lessons. That's what the word Midrash means. But in the literature of Chazal, all of Midrash falls under essentially three categories, major categories. The first major division is between Midrash Halacha and Midrash Agadah. Midrash Halacha is those aspects of Midrash, or those aspects of expounding the text, that were halachic in nature and that formed the first line of the written texts of Torah Shebaal Peh, upon which the Mishnah was built, and upon which the Gemara was then formulated, and upon which the halacha was formulated. So Midrash Halacha is not just expositions of the text and lessons for the purpose of moral insights. Midrash Halacha is the foundation of Torah Shebaal Peh. There's a separate genre of Midrash called Midrash Agadah, Hamaletic Midrashim, which are there much more. Okay, that was. Which are knocking someone. Okay. Which is there much more to analyze the text, but also to draw from the text all kinds of moral lessons and stories and ideas and insights. And Haggadic Midrashim, Hamaletic Midrashim, fall into a genre that spans historically 600, 700, 800 years, even past the time of Chazal, and some of the later Midrashim written in the early days of the Rishonim. Midrash Halacha is a different set of texts. There is essentially one book of Midrash Halacha on each one of the Chumashim.
It's much earlier.
It's all Tanaitic. Midrash Agadah is primarily Amoraic or Talmudic in period and post Talmudic. Midrash Halacha are all Tanaitic because it's essentially it predates the Mishnah, in fact. And Midrash Halacha, there's only one set of halachic Midrash on each book of Chumash, and only starting with Shmot. So there's a Mechilta on Shmot, and a Sifra on Vayikra or Torat Kohanim, and then a Sifrei or Sifram Bamidbar, and a Sifrei and Vayikra and Dvarim. That's the names of the books. But that's it. So when we look at a halachic source in a midrash like the Sifrei or Sifra, it's a different context than looking at a homiletic discussion based on a text in a different midrash. So with that introduction, I'll show you the same conversation that appears in the Gemara in Sanhedrin appears in the Sifrei. V'yamarta asim alai melech, right on that pasuk in Dvarim that says, you will say, I want to appoint a king. Rav Nehorai Omer, Harei Zed Dvar Gnai Li Yisrael. This is a terrible indictment against Israel. The request of a king was a Dvar Gnai. Translate Dvar Gnai. Not nice. Reproach. Something which was reproachable. Shenemar, when Shmuel responded to this request, God said to him, this request is tantamount to rejecting God as leading them. Remember what Gidon said to the people when they asked Gidon to rule over them, you and your son and your son's sons, right? And his answer was, Hashem yimshol ba, b'chem. God rules over you. Amar Rav Yehuda responded to Rav Nahurai, same two sages that appeared earlier in the Gemara. V'alo mitzvah min haTorah lishol haMelech. It's a mitzvah to appoint a king. Shene'emar, som tasim alech haMelech. You shall appoint a king. So lama ne'enshu b'yemei Shmuel. So then why did the people, why were they punished? Lefi shekedimu al yadam. They jumped the gun. Okay. Debatable. What does it mean they jumped the gun? They asked too early.
Right.
Debatable. It wasn't the right time. Then what about the phrase, G'chol ha'goyim, asher sivavotai, like all the nations around me? That doesn't sound particularly positive. So Rav Nahurai Omer, again Rav Nahurai, the same Rav Nahurai says, Lo bikshu lehem melech ela la'avidam avodah zarah. Why did they want a king? Because they wanted to worship idolatry. They wanted the kings to lead them to idolatry. They really desired idolatry. They were frustrated and fed up with the tshuva.
They need a king for that.
Shenema vayinu gam anachnu kochol agoyim ushvatan amakeinu v'yatza lefaneinu v'nuchamet mechamoteinu. So we are left with this very debatable conversation between Rav Nahurai and Rav Yehuda.
So you said that the
Sifrei
predates the Gemara.
It does. So the same machloket in the Gemara, it's sort of summarized.
But it's the same historical period, isn't it then?
The Gemara quotes lots of sources of the Sifrei and
so
the Sifrei.
This is a Braita.
This is a Braita in the Gemara that's relating or quoting this bait that appears in Rav Yehuda Nevi'ah Tanaim. Right.
Okay.
Now, I'm going to conclude in a second, but I just want to show you one observation, which is, how do we paskin? If this is really a halachic decision, then a halachic debate has to have a psak halacha. So however we paskin, and there's a major, major dispute amongst the mafashim, most famous argument against the position that a mitzvah to appoint a king is mandatory was articulated by the Abarbanel. And everybody pretty much unanimously agrees, he pretty much says it, that the Abarbanel's position was very much an outgrowth of his own experiences under the hands of kings, where he goes with a tirade against the powers of king and the corruption of kings and the last thing in the world that we want is a king. Right? Because Abarbanel lived through the Inquisition in the days of Ferdinand and Isabella.
Exile.
And exile, after all that he did for the people of Spain and for the king of Spain. On the other hand, there are other Rishonim, the Ramban, and others who felt, no, this is a mitzvah, and we need to recognize and value it as a mitzvah. Psak halacha, and with this I'll conclude today, but how do you determine a psak halacha in a matter of halacha that doesn't necessarily have application today? If you remember, the Shulchan Aruch paskins all aspects of halacha that are relevant to the time of the Shulchan Aruch, 16th century. Any matter of halacha that was not in practice, the laws of the Beit HaMikdash, the laws of the temple service, the laws of Tumah Taharah, the laws of all those, the Shulchan Aruch doesn't address. The Rambam does. And there's a general consensus that in aspects of halacha where in things that are left out of the Shulchan Aruch, we paskin like the Rambam. So the Rambam's psaki is very important for us. The Rambam in Source 5 quotes the following. Shalosh mitzvot nitztavu Yisrael b'shat knisatan la'aretz limnot lahem melech shenemar som tasim alech ha-melech lachritza rosh al-amalek shenemar timchet zech al-amalek livnot bet ha-bechira shenemar l'shichnot yidushu uvat ha-shama. So it's clear that the Rambam positions himself in the Psak in accordance with the position of Rav Yehuda. So that's our starting point. Our starting point is that we need to understand in the context, with all of the negativity around the mitzvah of melech, there's also a mitzvah of melech. And that's how we paskin. So we need to start from that position and then come back to the parasha and figure out why all the negativity, if in fact there's a mitzvah of minhag melech. We can side with the Nahurai and give up the mitzvah, but lahalacha we paskin like the Rambam. So that's our challenge and our starting point is at the Shema next week.